the drama kick, the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, let the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, let the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, 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 the drama kick die.
Welcome to the Big Three Roll-Ups Florida State Tribe Talk. I'm Josh Newberg of Knowles 24/7 and the Big Three Roll-Up, and this is something I like to put together about three, four times a year. We recorded our debut episode of Tribe Talk back in February, and now that the spring game's over, I want to sit down for another one. So if you are new to Tribe Talk, this is not the regular Big Three Roll-Up. This is an FSU-only podcast. This FSU panel is made up of some recognizable names in FSU media. And then we have Trey.
Yeah!
But we're here to talk about the Knowles as a family tonight. So let's get this thing started. I'm going to introduce everybody. From Knowles 24/7, we have Chris Nee. From The Athletic, Tayshawn Reed, whose focus is primary on Florida State. Then we have Wayne McGahee of the Tallahassee Democrat. Kurt Weiler of the Tallahassee Democrat. And also Trey Rowland. You can find Trey on the iTunes Top 200 Weekly for his podcast called The Rollcast.
Yeah, nice plug, Josh. Thank you.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to Tribe Talk. Let's get started. The spring game was about a week ago. We've all had time to digest this and make sense of what we saw. So, Tashad, I'm going to start with you. What made the biggest impression on you last weekend?
I think it had to be James Blackman and just how comfortable he looked. It seemed like he was kind of secure in being the number one guy now. It was kind of his first time entering the spring, having that kind of role. I didn't really see any nerves coming out of him. He forced a couple throws that should have been picks. Jaleel McCray, I think, dropped two of them. But overall, just how comfortable he looked in the system and with his teammates and kind of just being the number one guy.
Yeah, absolutely. James threw for over 400 yards, three touchdowns. We got to see the Bryles offense in action, going deep. Wayne, tell me, what's the biggest difference from last year's spring game to this year's spring game that we've seen on the offensive side of the ball now that Kendall Bryles is here?
Well, if you remember last year's spring game, the offense didn't really look like an offense. It was struggling to move the football. Bailey Hockman was praised for his ability to throw the football away, if you remember correctly. Yeah. That was the biggest takeaway from him. So, you know, it was actually really nice to see an offense that was actually out there working together. They looked really smooth. They looked on point. Kendall Bryles has, you know, really seemed to make an impact on this Florida State offense, and it looked night and day different just because of how smooth everything ran from top to bottom.
I agree, especially the tempo. It was nice to see everybody getting lined up straight and enough men on the field and all that good stuff. Back to some semblance of organized football. Chris Nee of Knowles 24/7 wanted to ask you about the defense. Throughout the spring, we saw some experimenting going on the defensive line. What was your takeaway on defense from the spring game?
Well, from the spring game itself, I didn't really take a whole lot away. I thought the defense was pretty vanilla. I did think Jaleel McCray showed he is certainly a player, as did some of those other young guys. Akeem Dent's the next one that comes to mind. But, I mean, any day that the offenses compile over 900 yards of offense, kind of hard to take anything positive away from what you're watching with the defense. The main takeaway for me, though, what I want to see between now and when they kick off with Boise, where is the pass rush going to come from?
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to talk about that. Kurt, on the defensive side of the ball, we saw them try to add some speed to the edges, moving Leonard Warner down and possibly, you know, moving Janarius Robinson to backing up Kando. What's your best guess on what we see on this defensive front come August?
My best guess is, as of right now, those defensive tackles, I would say, better be good because, I mean, we didn't see – much promising in terms of a guy who's going to step up and take that next step in replacing Brian Burns next year. I mean, Josh Kando is always a guy you've liked on paper and has shown it in flashes, but hasn't had to show it consistently, and it looks like he's going to have to now. And Janarius Robinson's never been a pass rusher, and it sure looks like he's going to be asked to kind of step into a bigger role there. So, yeah, the hope, I would say, is that some of those linebackers are able to step up into more of a pass rush role, because if they're not able to step up and kind of the change to where they're integrating some of the 3-4, I think it's definitely going to be a problem for Florida State.
Yeah, I agree. They're going to have to find it somewhere. Trey Rowland, these spring games can be hell for fans, because you're rooting for everybody and you want to see a big play, but then, you know, what does it mean for the defense when the offense scores? But what would you got a pulse for this fan base? What would you say FSU fans are most excited about heading out of the spring game?
I'll be honest, man. I don't know how much excitement there is. This is a pretty battered, disillusioned fan base. And it's a fucking practice. It was a practice in front of like 25,000 people. We have takeaways, but all of my observations have been from like an extremely kind of macro level. Like the offense looked more cohesive. They looked more organized. They were only running 4 to 5 plays against a vanilla defense. I mean, that was a really shitty lead into what I'm about to say. I'm a little bit more optimistic on it just because they look like they knew what they were doing. Wide receivers knew if they were supposed to be on the line of scrimmage or not. The guys looked like they knew who they were supposed to block, couldn't always do it all the time, but at least everybody knew what they were supposed to do. So I think it's a good foundational building block, but I don't really know, and you probably have seen this in recruiting, I don't know how much people are taking away from it. It's still a very wait-and-see mode from everybody.
The wait-and-see mode, that should be that's just the theme of the offseason, I think, for everything. But there were some guys making plays, and there was a lot of young guys making plays. Wayne, which young guy impressed you the most? Because there was a bunch out there on Saturday. Who impressed you the most?
Yeah, Jaleel McCray was mentioned. Akeem Dent was mentioned. You know, Keyshawn Helton is a guy. Yeah, he came out. I think he had something like 157 yards. He would have had a touchdown if not, you know, for Tamorin Terry. But I've been impressed with him since he stepped on campus. And, you know, he proved he belonged last year. Now he's just proving that he is an elite football player. I really like the way he plays the game. He plays it like every single snap is the final snap of the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that, you know, it impressed me from the moment that he got here. So I thought that he had a pretty fantastic spring game, and I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah, man. Personally, I can't wait to see Akeem Dent. There's a reason why he was a 5-star for about 98% of his recruitment, and then he got the late bump down to a 4, but he was outstanding. Tashawn Reed, I got a question for you up front. Dante Lucas sure does talk the part. How did he look to you in the spring game, though?
I think he looked all right. It was kind of tough to judge the offensive line as a whole, just because they had it all mixed up with the draft, and then you had, I think, Landon Dickerson was sitting out, and then obviously Cole Minshew was sitting out. So there were a lot of guys playing with each other and lined up next to each other, necessarily aren't used to it. And I guess that was right. Just overall kind of theme with the spring game in general, and kind of part of what the coaches wanted to do. But just him and the rest of the offensive line, they looked decent. I didn't think they looked, you know, amazing or anything like that, but decent is a big upgrade over last year.
So if they yes.
kind of just keep that trend going, I think. And obviously he's a freshman, you know, early enrollee. So I think by the time fall rolls around, he could be a guy that kind of enters the rotation a little bit there at guard.
Yeah, and I like the fact that he was out there trying to bury some people. Like, even though he, you know, the footwork wasn't always right and he missed on a few, but he had that attitude that I think Florida State linemen have been lacking. So now he's just got to go put it out together. I agree. I don't think he's a guy that's going to come in and make an impact from week one, but he's looked pretty good. Chris Knee, Knowles 24/7. I know you spent a lot of time watching this offensive line group. What would you say, who are the 5 best offensive linemen you saw this spring?
Well, I don't know that we saw them, because I think Dickerson and Minshew fit into that. As far as the guys we did see, I mean, Bavion Johnson's going to be the center. He's got some work to do there. Needs to get better at snapping, but he's made strides. He's working hard. I think Dante's in that conversation. Dante will at least line up and try to whip the guy's ass across from him. That's an improvement from what we saw last year. Beyond those two, I'm trying to think of who else I really would. I mean,
can't get the five.
It's so bad.
It stopped at two. Fuck.
Trey's jumping out of his window.
Oh, God.
I mean, you did see Ryan Roberts walk into the building, so.
Ah, three.
Well, you know, Brady Scott deserves a little praise. Brady plays hard. He's a guy that the effort's consistent. The results aren't always great, but you know what you're going to try to get out of him. The tackle situation still sucks. I'm not going to try to put, you know, lipstick on that pig. Juwan still is hesitant to always touch people. Chaz Neal, to his credit, he is developing, but he's not there yet. Same with Jalen Goss. He's not a guy who's ready for prime time yet. I do think both of those guys have the capability of giving him something down the road. But I think they're more 2020 types than 2019 types. That group needs help. I mean, it's the reason they're looking at the transfer market. I think Ryan is an important guy for them. I think Drew Richmond, who they're trying to get, is an important guy for them. They need help up front. I don't like their tackle situation. And I think it was kind of hidden in that game by the fact that FSU's pass rush is mediocre on the edge.
So, Wayne, do we see Juwan Williams? I'm asking for Trey. Do we see Juwan Williams start week one against Boise State?
Oh, God, man, if we...
I hope not.
You're good.
If we're seeing Juwan Williams start week one, Florida State's in really, really deep trouble.
Right. We're not taking shots at Juwan. I mean, this is just the situation we find ourselves in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Juwan's a nice kid, and, you know, I feel bad talking bad about him, but he's just not a good football player. He's not a good tackle. And if, you know, a guy like Ryan Roberts comes in and just can't get it down, I'm not really sure what other options Florida State has at this point, because Jay Williams, the other JUCO tackle the JUCO tackle that Florida State brought in, wasn't very good this spring. He wasn't very good at all. You know, and I think that's something that me and a couple of the other guys here expected. But, yeah, if Juwan Williams starting for Florida State in the fall, I don't see how much changes on the offensive line from what we saw last year.
Yeah.
They tried to gas him up so much during the spring, him and Mike Arnold, and it's still same old with those two. Arnold's inconsistent play to play, and Juwan just is what he is.
Which is not very good, unfortunately. Kurt, what's your take on Bavion Johnson? He's a guy that Florida State fans have really been begging to make some sort of impact for the last 2 years, really. And like Chris said, you know, he's learning to snap better, but like he's been on campus now for 3 years. Do you think we're going to be able to get to see anything out of Bavion Johnson this year?
Well, I think you're going to have to, because I don't think Florida State has a better option at center. I mean, Brady Scott has played some there. They kind of brought him in with the possibility of playing there, but they looks like they need him elsewhere. I mean, he's played tackle. He's all over the place. So he sure, like Chris said, he looks like the guy. And so I think you saw and you heard about from practice the improvement with the snapping, and I think it showed in the spring game. I mean, he didn't have any of those where they were going 15 yards back downfield like Eberle had a couple of last season. I mean, he had that injury that cost him about an entire season with where it kind of put him a little behind the eight ball. I think you're starting to see it now, and I think, I mean, you're kind of stuck with him, so you hope there's progress, but I think you are kind of starting to see some of it.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I'm going to move out of spring practice after this. I got one more question. I'm going to start with Tashaun, but everybody else can kind of jump in on things that they've seen. But 1 year ago at this time, we were talking a lot about culture and the change, and things were very hype last year. It seems like there's a different tone. Being out at practice every day, Tashaun, what have you noticed different from last year to this year?
Well, I think it just seems like it's a little bit more realistic as far as speaking specifically to Willie Taggart and how he's viewing things. I know last year when he came in, it was kind of all about, you know, getting back in the national title picture and, you know, we're going to be at the top of the ACC and all that kind of stuff. And I think coming off of not only last year but the year before that, I think you kind of have to alter things a little bit to be a little bit more realistic about the situation that you're in, which is pretty much a rebuild at this point. So I feel like, you know, obviously he's not saying, you know, we're not going to win this year, we're not going to be good this year, but I think he's not trying to oversell himself or oversell the team. And I think at least I can't speak for the fan base, but I would assume that they're a little bit more appreciative of that than somebody just coming in and saying X, Y, and Z is going to happen when they don't think it is actually.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this point, you just got to go out and everybody's in wait and see mode. So you just got to go out and do it. But have you guys, anybody else that's been out of practice, have you guys noticed anything different?
Something that I thought stood out to me was, the team is behind James Blackman. Last year, there was still a quarterback battle. We didn't know what was going to happen with DeAndre. You know, was Blackman going to beat out Hockman in the fall? This is James Blackman's team. There's no question about that. And I think that's going to help them going forward. They know who the leader is. They don't have to divide into camps, which is something that, you know, DeAndre Francois is very good at doing, making the team divide into camps. This is James Blackman's team. They are behind him, and I think that's going to help them going forward.
Yeah, Chris, yeah, wanted to follow up.
Yeah, I'd add on the leadership point that I think guys like Akers and Marvin Wilson, and Akers did a good job trying to make an effort of doing it last year, but he got frustrated during the season. But I think Akers, Marvin Wilson, Blackman, as mentioned, I think there's a little bit more leadership at the top this year. Last year, Brian Burns kind of had to shoulder most of that by himself. And, I think this year there's a few guys who they should rely pretty heavily on who will be, you know, at the forefront of delivering that message. And I think the supporting cast has bought in a little better. I think DJ Matthews is a guy you can single out as somebody that's developed, matured a great deal over the last year. Dontavius Jackson has continued that climb of maturing, obviously good friends with Marvin Wilson. So I think he's a guy that will echo Marvin very well. I think they have a little bit of that in the locker room more so than they did last year, with a few less negative elements in the locker room that may, you know, if things do go poorly or go sour, that can kind of help, you know, eviscerate the situation quickly, like we saw last year.
Not naming names or anything, though, Chris.
DeAndre Francois! Nudie Murray! Dickheads!
Don't forget Saquandre.
Oh, man, Glee, bro!
It's tough. He's a likable guy, at least. But yeah, at least outwardly, like...
A likable idiot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
let's slow down on that.
Never mind.
All right, Wayne, this one's to you. Now that spring's over, what was maybe the biggest surprise over that four or five week period to you?
You know, I don't think there were very many surprises. I think the team was who, you know, we thought they were. Maybe I was a little surprised at how quickly the team adapted to the speed that Bryles wanted to run, considering how much trouble that they had last year. But, you know, we knew that the offensive line would struggle. We knew it would be James Blackman teams. I mean, maybe the biggest thing is, you know, Jordan Travis and the way he played, because in the first practice of spring, he was terrible. I mean, he was downright awful. It was bad. And then, you know, you saw him in the spring game where it wasn't anything flashy. You didn't see him make a lot of downfield throws, but he was acting up with the football. You know, maybe that's the biggest surprise considering where he was, at the start of spring. But, I mean, you knew the offensive line wasn't going to be great, and the offensive line didn't look great. You knew the pass rush was going to be suspect because, you know, you lost the best pass rusher and there wasn't really anybody behind him. And then, you know, you knew that there's a lot of young, talented players in the wide receiver core, and, you know, that showed out. So I don't maybe Jordan Travis, but I don't think there was a whole lot of surprises this spring. I think it was just the team growing as a whole, and that's about it.
Yeah. Tashawn, this one's to you. Last year, the offensive line and linebacker were kind of like, those two issues were bound about within the FSU media and fan base as the two position groups that could cause FSU troubles. Did they do enough to fix those two positions? And what do you think the issues are going to be talked about this summer? What are people going to dwell on?
I think linebacker they did for sure. I like the switch of moving Hamsa from safety down to linebacker, because I know last year he obviously led the team in tackles, but he was pretty terrible when it came to coverage. So I like that move. I think they got a little bit deeper with Jaleel McCray coming in, and then this summer they'll have Kevon Glenn coming in and Kalen DeLoach, so they have a lot more depth than they did last year at linebacker. Right. You know, obviously if health holds up. Offensive line, you know, they added bodies, but I think the kind of issue is kind of, I think Chris said earlier, is tackle is still kind of a question mark. You know, Ryan Roberts is kind of the guy that everybody's looking to fix that issue, particularly at left tackle. Landon Dickerson, if he can ever get healthy, you know, can help out at right tackle. So I think offensive line is a lot more questionable at this point than linebacker. And I think that's probably going to be throughout the summer. The biggest question is, you know, what is this going to look like once the fall comes around?
Yeah, I agree. I think to an extent this year, running back. Chris, you sensed that Cam Akers had taken over a more leadership role. But what about your sense of Cam on the field? Do you think he's regained some of that confidence as a runner?
Yeah, but I think it also goes hand in hand with the offensive line doing a better job. Cam's a guy that needs it set up to some degree for him to take advantage of it. I think LeBourne's a guy that shows a little better vision and runs that way, and I think we saw that in the spring game with the production of those two. I think the rushing attack can be fine if the O-line can be mediocre to decent, and they have some interior talent to allow them to do something to the inside. I think Coach Browse is also a creative play caller who will do a good job of getting his backs the ball in different ways to take advantage of what they can do, kind of coaching around the deficiencies that they have. So, yeah, I think that the running back situation will be fine. The production will be somewhat, you know, hand-in-hand with how the offensive line is able to do. You know, I'm not expecting this team to just run downhill on people despite the talent they have in the stable.
Right. Trey Rowland, as a diehard FSU fan, I agree with what Tashawn said. I do think FSU did a good job to shore up some issues at linebacker, but were you surprised FSU didn't do more to address these offensive line issues and really quarterback depth issues this offseason?
Oh, man, you want to talk about quarterbacks? You want to get me on a Sam Howell kick? That's cool, Josh. It's not for lack of trying. It's just they couldn't get the right kids that they wanted in. They had a five-star kid from Mississippi, Charles Cross, committed. They were on some really high level kids coming off of last summer, Evan Neal, all those type of kids, but they didn't move on to the plan B's quick enough once the season started to go in the shitter, and it is what it is. I don't think it was from lack of trying. I'm disappointed with the results. I think especially with the quarterbacks, man, that was I don't know. Then you get into the Walt Bell stuff and then Sam Howell and his little midget asshole father and all this other downward spiral of mistakes. And so, yeah, I was disappointed with the results. I think anybody can be disappointed with the results. I was disappointed with some of the processes that they had in place on the recruiting side, just not being able to get to some of those plan B kids like a Nick Penley, that kid in who was a tackle that ended up committing to Mississippi State. I think they offered him like a couple weeks before signing day or something. So there was a little bit of scrambling. It wasn't for lack of effort. It was just, man, that season got away from him real quick.
Yeah, so outside of offensive line, what's your biggest concern heading into week one?
All right, caveat. Offensive line, massive concern. Everything else is going to be very small. I'm interested to see how the safeties perform, because if you remember from Clemson on, I can't remember. I have PTSD thinking about those games, so I forget which one happened in what order. But there was a distinct point in the season last year where offensive coordinators were like middle of the field, open for business. Hamza couldn't cover very well. I mean, Stanford Samuels was back there, but it's not his natural position. So you got Akeem Dent as a freshman. You got Levante Taylor, who they're trying out at safety. Cyrus Fagan looked good back at safety. I guess Jaden Laws would be. Is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Do we know? So a lot of talented pieces, but they got to play together.
Right.
Because if not, man, I know that they're going to try to mix it up with the 3-4 looks. I think they're going to run a little bit more cover one, cover three, so you have a safety in the middle of the field. But the talent's there. I just want to see how the safeties perform, because we got tore up in the middle of the field in that kind of intermediate position just behind the linebackers, just in front of the safeties.
Yeah. Wayne, what's your take after spring has gone? What do you think the back end of the defense look like week one?
I mean, I definitely think it's going to be Asante and Stanford on the corner. I think Dent's going to find his way to play into the starting lineup from week one. We didn't get to see anything from Jaden, so we don't know how he's going to look. You know, will he be able to beat out, you know, Levante? will Levante stick at safety? Like we don't, you know, there's so many unknowns there. I do think it's going to be much better than it was last year because it's going to be much more athletic than it was last year. And there's a lot more depth at the safety position. So I do think that the secondary is going to be much better than it was a year ago, but I'm in wait and see mode to see who starts there. I do think the corner positions are locked down, but I do think safety is completely up for grabs between Jaden Akeem and Levante Taylor. Maybe, you know, if Cyrus Fagan can build off a strong spring, maybe he finds a way into the rotation, but you know, he really struggled last year and you know, his confidence was shot. So I think it's going to take a lot for him to get that back.
Yeah, I agree. But Dent moving back there makes me feel a lot better. He's just such a playmaker. Chris Nee, what position group do you think needs to improve the most outside offensive line, which we know is a work in progress? But which one do you think needs to improve the most between right now and fall?
For me, it's edge rushers. To make that secondary even better, you need to be able to pressure the passer, and FSU needs to figure that out. Yeah, Leonard Warner moving to that outside linebacker spot to come off the edge is basically a DN, I think, is a positive. That plays to his greatest strength. Dennis Briggs is a guy who I like a lot. I know Wayne's a fan of his. I'm sure a few other guys on the pod are as well. But they need more from Kando. They need more from Janarius Robinson. They need more from guys like Emmett Rice or Adonis Thomas, Josh Brown, that they'll line up over there with Leonard Warner. They just need to figure out a way to create some havoc off the edge because they have talent on the interior at defensive tackle, and they have better talent at linebacker spot than they did a year ago, and the secondary is more capable than they were a year ago. But they need a pass rush. If you can't get home to a quarterback, it doesn't matter how good your back half of the defense is. You give a guy 4 or 5 seconds, you're going to get picked apart.
Yeah, I think that pass rush, where it's going to come from, is definitely going to be the hot ticket besides the offensive line that people are talking about all offseason. Tashawn, to you, I know Florida State has been dabbling with these 3-4 looks. Willie Taggart has been kind of coy in really admitting that they're moving to a 3-4. What implementation, if any, how do you see it playing into 2019 on the defensive side of the football?
Well, from what I've gathered, it's more so of a thing they're adding on to their base defense. So they're not switching. They're still the 4-3 defense, but they're integrating the 3-4 in certain situations is what I've gathered anyway. And so I think there will be times where they do still have, you know, J-Rob and Joshua Kando both out there at the same time in the natural 4-3 like they kind of did at times last year. But I think 3-4, they'll kind of work it in maybe if they feel like in a certain situation, maybe a long passing down, they want to bring some additional heat off the edge and they'll go to that, but I don't think they're completely switching over.
Okay. I agree. I think we're going to see elements of it, but it'll be interesting because they don't have the personnel to make that switch right now. But I want to switch it over. I want to talk a little bit more about the quarterback position. Great to see James Blackman out there. I was not a believer that he could lead from the bench. I think he needed to be out on the field. Kurt Weiler, to you. You know, Wayne said that Jordan Travis didn't have the best start to spring ball, but what did we like about Jordan Travis this spring?
Wayne is correct. The first 2 days, honestly, there wasn't much separation between him and a walk-on in Nolan McDonald. And some of that, sure, some of that comes from him being new in the offense and kind of getting that playbook somewhat recently and being fresh in it. But you saw a lot of growth, and Willie Taggart even kind of made a point during one of his talk shows during spring to kind of say, he's gotten a lot better. Like, the quarterbacks are a lot better. Kind of, I think, knowing that they didn't look so good in those two practices, the fans were able to come watch in their entirety. I think his strength in the offense separates from James Blackman in that I think you saw him behind a testy offensive line at times use his legs well as an escape. He got out of some jams and was able to do that. And I think he didn't take a lot of the deep shots you saw James Blackman take, but he found a lot of success over the middle and in the short to intermediate routes that – I think you leave now, not even considering, I mean, adding Alex Hornibrook over the summer, you feel a lot better about the backup situation if, God forbid, it comes to it this year.
Yeah. Wayne, we've seen what Jordan Travis brings. We don't know exactly what Alex Hornibrook brings because we haven't seen him in this offense. But in your opinion, James Blackman goes down, and FSU needs to win games. Let's say Travis gets that waiver as well. Who are you going with in 2019 as your backup, Travis or Hornibrook?
Oh, it's Jordan Travis, and it's not even close. You know, I didn't understand. I mean, I guess I understand taking Hornibrook just because, you know, he's a warm body at quarterback, and Florida State doesn't have a lot of those. But, you know, just the fit as far as the system goes never made sense to me. That dude has, like, negative 300 rushing yards for his career. He doesn't move well. He's had, like, 6 concussions, you know, and missed time last year. So,
God.
You know, one of the reasons that he's not coming back, you know, to Wisconsin is because of those concussions and the, you know, injury concerns. So I would absolutely go with Jordan Travis just because I don't think Hornibrook fits the offense at all in any way, shape, or form. But I also am, you know, encouraged by what I saw from Jordan Travis as far as, you know, the spring game goes. After, like I said, what was an abysmal start, you know, I was very impressed with the way he played 2 Saturdays ago.
Yeah, well, Wayne, if you're a quarterback with concussion issues, great choice coming to Tallahassee to play behind this offensive line. That probably confirms it. So, okay, got it. Jesus Christ.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, all things, you know, hey, we needed a body. A body's a body, right, Trey?
Yeah, body's a body, Josh. That's where we're at.
Body's a body.
We definitely needed them, and it was a weird... You can attest, man. We were in a weird spot at the graduate transfer market. Wanted Hurts, wanted Fields. They had better options, so they didn't come to us. And then the kind of from all the tiers down, you're probably not going to beat out James Blackman. So we went to the Great White North, and we got negative 300 concussion guy. And whatever, we need people. We need people. He's got experience.
All right. Well,
Jordan Travis didn't get booed off the field at the spring game like a certain guy down in Miami, so that might be a
lot. Oh, shade! Shade! Tate and shade.
Yeah, I haven't watched the film yet, admittedly. I haven't watched it, but I heard it was...
Is there any film? They didn't stream it, dude.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
You can probably go on some Canes fans Facebook Live and find it, I'm sure.
Kane Swag 305 Boy Palm Tree Facebook Live. Okay.
180 views.
Bro.
But killer. While we're talking about quarterbacks, I'm not anticipating James Blackman getting injured. So let's not even talk about who's going to replace him. But to Chris Knee, we've heard a lot about the Bryles offense. Last year, everybody wanted to see DeAndre run it more. The rumors we're hearing is that they're not going to really even ask Blackman to be that type of guy. What do you think Blackman's role within that quarterback position is going to be? Is Bryles going to ask him to be a runner?
I don't expect to see James trying to skedaddle down the field regularly. I think the most important thing is, one, read it right. Two, move when there's a hole and you can move to it when the pocket needs to move, move with the pocket type of thing. I thought Jordan Travis actually did that very well in the spring game. James didn't do a poor job of it. I just thought Jordan did a better job of it. I think for James, the key for him to make the leap from what we saw in the spring to what he'll need to be in the fall is being a little more quick and decisive with some of the stuff he does. We know he can go vertical. He can push it down the field better than anybody on the roster. I think for him, fitting what Kendall likes to do in the offense, Coach Bryles likes to do, is just be quicker. Get it out of your hand. Make those decisions sometimes, you know, a little bit quicker instead of holding on to let a play develop. Just get rid of it, especially considering the O-line you're going to be behind. There's going to be situations where you're going to have to get rid of it quickly. You know, do them the favor, take the 6, move forward, keep playing.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, I've always said this, but to me, when Blackman gets in the open field as a runner, he looks like a baby giraffe trying to run through the Sahara and not get eaten by lions. He's just all over the place.
Very vivid imagery, Josh. Very vivid.
I just see arms and legs, you know, going in all directions when he's still moving forward.
That's all that James is, arms and legs.
Yeah, I mean, literally.
A giraffe's probably faster than an ostrich, right, Jameis?
Animal planet talk.
Once the ostrich got going, forward momentum could carry him. Tashawn, this one's to you. Why do you think we didn't see more of Nolan McDonald? There's some sort of buzz. Maybe it was just FSU fans holding out hope. But the walk-on quarterback, we didn't see much of him. What's your takeaway from McDonald, and do you think he's going to factor in at the quarterback position at all in 2019?
Well, before the spring started, they kind of had a sophomore availability back in February, I believe. And it seemed like everybody was pretty high on Nolan and kind of confident about his abilities and you know, potential to maybe fight for that backup spot. Obviously, this was before they got Alex Hornibrook and they're still waiting on Jordan Travis. But it was kind of surprising to pretty much, I don't think he maybe had like 5 passing attempts in the spring. He really didn't throw too much at all.
He was 4 for 6.
Yeah, and then Alex Iliasami threw like double that, I'm pretty sure. So that was kind of strange to see. So I don't know if something else is going on. I mean, he is a walk-on quarterback, so it's not like, you know, the most mind-blowing thing in the world.
Right, but he did have a little bit of buzz out there because he had that one play that went on Instagram, you know, that got everybody going. And I just think, do you think Taggart sent a message? I mean, do you think, shouldn't say Taggart sent a message, but do you think that those numbers are indicative that this guy's just not somebody we should hold out hope for in 19?
I wouldn't say that. I don't think so. Off of spring game anyway, I think it's a little bit too firm of a judgment to make. I just, like I haven't heard anything personally about it. I don't know if he maybe tweaked something, if he was hurt. I haven't heard anything about him being hurt. But I wouldn't say he's completely out of it. I do think he would be firmly behind, you know, Hornibrook and Travis, if he gets his waiver cleared. I think the only way he really can kind of work his way into any kind of backup role is if Travis' waiver gets denied, which we're still, you know, waiting on. It's kind of weird that it's taking this long. So maybe they did have some kind of, you know, disagreement or something behind the scenes that we don't know about, but that's about the only explanation I could think of.
Right. I agree. Wayne, how are you feeling about the quarterback? I don't know if I got your answer, but how are you feeling about Blackman, Jordan Travis? I mean, who's your most capable backup heading into 2019?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that it's the James Blackman show, obviously. But I, you know, like I've said, it was I was very impressed with Jordan and what he brought to the table. I think he's a very capable backup. You know, I was impressed with the way that James ran the offense. I do think, like Chris said, he needs to be more decisive. When you make a decision, make the decision and go for it. I think that'll help him a lot. Just if he can be just a little bit more decisive and a little more clear in what he wants to do. But overall, I was very impressed. Obviously, he throws a very nice deep ball. We've seen that plenty of times before. So, you know, this is James Blackman's team. I'm more encouraged after the spring game than I was heading into the spring with the quarterback situation, just because of the way Travis played and the progress that I think James showed. And then, you know, after those two, it's, you know, there's not really very many teams in the country that can sustain 2 quarterback injuries in the first place. So, you know, there's no point of even getting into that.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to move on. We're going to talk a little bit of some recruiting talk before we end this thing. Florida State currently sits at number 10 in the country. Last year, stark contrast to this year, FSU, I believe right after the spring game, hit number 1 in the country. It seemed like they couldn't miss. Of course, a 5-win season isn't going to do any favors for FSU on the recruiting trail. But Chris Knee, what's your general feel for FSU recruiting now that the spring game is over? We're going to wait a week before the coaches hit the recruiting trail for the eval period. But what do you know, what's your general feel for FSU recruiting right now?
I think that having Jeff Sims in the fold is hugely important. He's an excellent reinforcement for the class for recruiting it. He's a peer that's going to recruit well to other kids. I think they've done a good job spreading a wide net on offensive linemen. Now, obviously, they need to, you know, finish and get several of those guys. But I think they've done a good job kind of not being hesitant of trying to go after a lot of guys. I think they also have a healthy understanding of the tier that they're living on right now. You know, they're not in it all that well for a whole lot of elite kids. Now, they are for some, and they're being intelligent with the ones they're pursuing that they're in it for. But largely, they're recruiting what I would consider not, you know, this isn't a knock on the prospects, but second-tier type prospects from an overall view of recruiting of the prospects available. And I think they've done a good job of kind of identifying those and being aggressive. They did a good job getting guys on in the spring, but the issue is, much like the fan base, most kids are in a wait-and-see mode. A lot of kids have said on the record, I want to see what they look like on the field. So the issue for FSU is a lot of kids don't have patience in recruiting, but they need kids to have patience until about October so they can put something on the field to show them that might help them get some returns in recruiting.
Yeah, I agree with all that. We talked to dozens of recruits coming out of the spring game, and even though a lot of them, you know, they're FSU's definitely building some relationships and they're keeping the interest of these kids, but they're hesitant right now to pull the trigger, unlike last year. So Trey Rowland, my question to you is, as a fan, what are your expectations? Because this is still Florida State, but you have to also realize where things are. But, you know, so as a fan, what are your expectations?
Great question, Josh. Great question. My expectation is always to recruit at the highest level. We're not in there. We're solidly in tier two, as Chris said. We're not shooting for the five stars. We're not playing spades with N'Kobe Dean's mom and having Cardell Thomas from Louisiana over for fucking honey fried chicken sundaes and all this other shit that we were doing last year, which the elite level kids, the top of the top, they showed a legit interest in FSU. So I know why they did it. They had a lot of buzz. So while I understand we're not in the same position, I'm not expecting a top five class, it's starting to get to the point where if you want Willie Taggart's tenure at Florida State to be anywhere near the level of success that's expected at Florida State, it's got to start happening soon. Usually a lot of these coaches, these new coaches, their first full recruiting class is so indicative of how their actual tenure at the school is going to go. You kind of let them have that first transition class that's a wash. And then after that, hey, dude, you need to start bringing in the talent or you're going to be gone. Especially with the way that Florida's looking. Georgia's a monster. You can make a fucking top five class from all the kids that old Dabo is pushing away. Like, they're telling like high kids to kick rocks, man.
In April.
So it's not the same environment that we were recruiting against in 2010, 2011, 2012. A lot of these schools, I mean, Auburn is in full spend now mode. Luckily, Gus Malzahn, who knows what's going to happen with him, but they're not playing around either. So the recruiting environment that Willie Taggart has inherited is a lot tougher than I think Jimbo had at the beginning of his career. So, okay, long-winded. I don't expect that, but I win some games, the staff, give them something to sell, top 10, you're going to need to start pushing into top five for like 2020 and beyond, or else you're gone, man. You really are.
Yeah, you got to improve the roster no matter the record. Wayne McGahee, there's been a lot of discussion this offseason about David Kelly now that he's in this on-field recruiting role position. But FSU was number one last year. So, you know, we're sitting at 10 this year. We know it's not because of Dave Kelly. We know it's because of the season they had last year. But is there any reason to believe that FSU can overcome last season without, you know, with the prowess of Dave Kelly? Or do we just have to wait till the season begins to really see a difference in recruiting?
I think it's just Florida State's going to have to play wait and see. Like, Coach Kelly and the rest of the coaching staff have done a really good job, like Chris said, of getting guys on campus. I mean, they got some really talented guys on campus for the spring game and for junior days. And they've done a really good job considering they're coming off a 5-7 season. But it's a whole bunch of, we're going to have to wait and see. Is this team actually going to be improved? Is this team, you know, is there going to be a new coach at Florida State in 2 years because they just aren't getting it together? You know, nobody wants to come into a situation like that. And with the way Florida State played last year, and if they don't, you know, look good on the field this year, you know, that's going to cause a lot of concern in the recruiting circles and stuff like that. It's going to make it very tough for Florida State to recruit, especially, you know, with the success that, you know, teams like Florida and Georgia and Alabama and Clemson, you know, the success that they're having, it's going to make it very difficult for Florida State to go out there and recruit against those guys if they don't find success on the field. So I think it's, you know, it's just going to be a whole bunch of, hey, we've got to wait until the season starts, and let's see if they are actually better.
Yeah, that's a fact. We're not going to dwell too much more on recruiting. But Tashawn, do you think David Kelly's new role is something that's maybe revolutionary that we're going to see FSU continue to do, or do you think this is just a one-year stop and then FSU moves him off the field after next season?
I think it's just a one-year thing. I think they wanted to move him off the field. You know, they put in a waiver for him, but it got denied. The Tiger's pretty upset about that, understandably. I think they do want another legitimate on-the-field coach with a responsibility coming in next year. Whether or not the NCAA will allow David Kelly to move off the field, I guess will play a big part in that. But ideally, they would want him to move into an off-the-field role, since he isn't necessarily – he's still overseeing things and helping out here and there, but he's not necessarily presiding over anything like he was last year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think this is something that they're going to try to make the best of in this current situation they find themselves in without the waiver. But I don't think this is something that's going to really impact recruiting all that much. And I think it's something that they'll correct after next season. We'll see David Kelly moved off the field. Let's close this bitch out. Kurt, to you. Boise State game coming up. It's a must win. How you feeling, man? How you feeling after this spring? How you feeling about this Boise State game?
It's a big one for Florida State. I mean, I think that's the most obvious statement maybe of all time. But, I mean, I feel like I could be wrong here. I don't have the best read on the fan base. I feel like when that finally rolls around, there's going to be that hype. There's going to be the – especially if the buzz out of fall is good. And I think if they lose that game, it's all gone, and they're right back where they were at the end of this season, at the end of this past season, maybe even lower. I mean, it's a Boise State team. You're going to still be favored to win that game. They lost their quarterback. There's potential they're going to be starting a true freshman. They lost a lot of pieces off that team. Yes, they've kind of established themselves where they're going to get the best of those kids that kind of aren't those top-tier kids, and they do pretty well for themselves and make the most of it.
Right.
But it's a team you should beat. And it's a team that I would say you have to beat. And there's plenty of time and plenty of things can change, but I'm going to go on a limb, maybe not a limb, and say that I think it's a team they will be.
Yeah!
I like it. I like that limb that you went on. Wayne, your thoughts on maybe what this team needs to improve most between now and that Boise State game?
The obvious answer is the offensive line. The second obvious answer is the pass rush. They've got to get better in the trenches. Marvin Wilson is an absolute monster, but outside of him, you know, there's not really that dude who scares you on the defensive line. There's nobody on the edge that scares you. You know, what are they going to do out there? Yeah, a name that's, you know, with the defensive line and or the defensive ends and the linebackers that wasn't mentioned that I think, you know, could play a big factor, assuming that, you know, he isn't suspended, is Xavier Peters. You know, he didn't play in the spring game because he was suspended, but, you know, he's a guy that moved to defensive end because they thought he could be the pass rusher, but he wanted to play linebacker. Now if they're, you know, running more 3-4 elements, that could be his role, finding his way, you know, into an impact guy, because he's a talented kid, but they've got to find something there. Then, you know, we're going to have to wait and see on the offensive line, because, you know, Dickerson was hurt, Minshew was hurt, Ryan Roberts wasn't on campus yet. You know, Dante Lucas was going through his first spring, and Bavion Johnson's still learning how to snap. So there's a there's a lot to go with the offensive line, but you know, the two biggest concerns that I have after the spring are in the trenches, and I think Florida State's still got a lot of work to do there as far as that goes.
Yeah, appreciate you, Wayne. Tashawn, to you, what's it going to take for FSU to win 9 games this season? That's not asking too much, is it?
That's a little steep, but we'll do a hypothetical here. obviously, like Wayne said, offensive line, that's number one. But another big thing, probably number two or number three for me, would be it's going to be interesting to see if they can get out their own way this year. Because a big thing last year was just they had so many penalties. And it wasn't just penalties. It was just the boneheaded, stupid penalties that you're just self-inflicted. Nobody's making you do it. You're just doing it. Or the turnovers, you know, throwing it straight to the defense at your own 10-yard line, or fumbling the ball at your own 15, those kind of things. Especially teams penalties. There's so many DJ Matthews punt returns that got wiped off the board. So just a lot of stuff like that. That can kind of, you know, the trick play against Miami, although I think it was, you know, legal, things like that, you know, just to make sure that's legal and things like all those kind of miscues that they made last year, all that shit has to go, especially when you don't have necessarily the same amount of talent as some of the teams like Clemson or mm-hmm. the other top teams in the country, you can't really afford to have those kind of things weighing you down.
Yeah, man, you can't go from 3rd and 4 to like 3rd and 19 after a couple whistles. That was just those were some killers, and there's nothing more frustrating, I think, for FSU fans than seeing them unable to get lined up for punt. You know, I mean, that was what put them to the edge. Chris Knee,
to count to 11.
R.I.P. Alonzo Hampton, bro. See you later.
Woo. Yeah, I'm not sure how we're going to coach special teams without a special teams coach. I don't know how that's going to work.
Won't be worse than last year.
But Chris Knee, since you've become like our offensive line specialist on this show,
Josh Newberg.
Give me your what's the best case scenario on the offensive line? Best case.
Roberts at one tackle positions. They get another transfer tackle in, Dickerson and either Minshew or Arnold at your two guard spots, and Bavion at center with a slight bit of improvement continuing his game. I think those are the five that you can get. I think with that group, you can at least push forward, have a much better running attack. And then with the passing game, it's a matter of understanding when to take your shots vertically and most of the time being quick and being efficient. Yeah. I think that's where this offense can find success. This offense needs to go for the juggler once in a while, but it also needs to be capable of playing ahead of the chains, creating positive momentum, holding onto the ball and giving the defense some substance of a break. You know, they can't have life where they're playing 3-20, living behind the chains like Tashaun was talking about, how they killed themselves offensively last year with that. They can't survive with that. And so much of that last year was pre-snap penalties by the offensive line, mm-hmm. which was a big positive in the spring game, even with a makeshift offensive line, two makeshift offensive lines. We did not see those pre-snap penalties. That was a semblance of a positive.
Yeah, I think that offensive line that you just, on paper, that O-line that you spelled out sounds like if they could come together, like they could really whoop some ass up front. Like, but of course, health goes a long way in that, right?
Yeah, and
I need to say real quick.
Yeah, Wayne, go ahead. We need Wayne in here.
I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. Did you really just say Mike Arnold?
Oh, yeah.
Man. Cole Minshew or Mike Arnold, they both have their deficiencies. Cole can't stay healthy. Mike struggles to have two good plays in a row.
Step in the right direction.
Yeah. Hey, it's clear as day somebody on the staff believes in Mike Arnold.
Maybe he has vertigo, Wayne. It's 2019.
They've run him out there two years in a row.
Bro.
And I think it's a matter of they believe what he can be, not what he is. And I'm with you. He needs to be better. But it's clear watching them in spring this year and last year during the season, they believe Mike Arnold is one of the pieces they can build around. I'm not in love with Mike Arnold, Wayne. You know this.
He's just trying to make the best of it, Wayne.
I know this, which is why I was extremely surprised to see, you know, to hear you to drop his name, especially considering Dickerson and Minshew were both hurt, and you've got a guy like Dante Lucas, who I definitely believe more in than Mike Arnold.
Yeah,
you know, just after watching him,
I believe in Dante too. I'm interested to see how Dante handles if they're able to run 80 or 90 plays in a game, how he holds up in the second half. I'm just, from a conditioning standpoint, I want to see him handle that. That's a lot to ask of any freshman offensive lineman, especially a guy who worked so hard to transform his body.
So you believe more in a guy nicknamed Big Greasy that he can run 90-something plays a game?
I don't truly believe in many of the FSU offensive linemen. Let's be careful with using the word believe in, because I'm not.
Somebody's got
to
run out there, right, Chris? I mean, they got to put somebody on the field.
I mean, hell, let's do like hockey. Let's have two lines or eight guys. Keep rolling them out there. Try to stay a little fresh.
They kind of do.
Guy across from you. All I need is
just get Leonard Hamilton out there. Line change.
Don't physically get your ass handed to you consistently for four quarters and look like you have no fight left in your body. I mean, that's just infuriating from that position.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Kurt, last word from you. What are you most excited about heading into next season? What's a good thing, a positive you can leave us on after these two idiots went at it?
Oh,
I think it was only a spring game, but you like what you saw, the improvement in tempo. If they're able to do that and able to sustain drives is the biggest thing they kind of weren't able to do last year with all the self-inflicted problems and pre-snap penalties and just all of that. If they're able to stay on the field, they're going to wear defenses down, and that will be the biggest thing that could help the defense from last year. I mean, the defense last year wasn't great. They were also done no favors by the offense. So the offense looks competent. Like, we seem to think they're going to look a little more competent. I think Kendall Briles, I don't want to use the word revolution, but I think Kendall Briles has changed some things. And I think having an offseason where Willie Taggart knows he's not running the offense is also a big deal. Letting it all be in Kendall Briles' hands, letting Taggart shift to more of a CEO role, will only help things in that matter. And I think that's just going to make everything run a lot smoother.
Yeah. I agree with a lot of that. FSU's offense has been doing FSU's defense no favors, really, since that Alabama-FSU game. I mean, they've been putting them in terrible spots ever since that game. But Trey Rowland, as an FSU fan, this time of year, we're usually kind of getting on the hype train right now, getting in anticipation of these hot summer months and going back and watching the season from last year and getting all excited. But
nobody's going to get excited watching that shit from last year.
I'm saying, normally, that's what we're doing as FSU fans. That's, you know, we're looking back at, oh, you know, we were one play away from the national championship or whatever. But this year, do you find yourself being more anxious, nervous, excited? Like, what's the feeling right now for you?
Oh, God, man. Listen, dude, that was just such a brutal tour of last year. I'm almost, like, desensitized to bad football. So I'm looking at the positive, Josh. I'm being optimistic. Tomorian Terry, my God, we didn't talk about him enough. What a glorious football player he is.
Yes.
I'm not even the same species as him. My fat, Latinous body and that athletic specimen. You got Marvin Wilson. You got Robert Cooper. Fucking looks like two guys jammed into one uniform. Hell of a dancer. Going to plug up the middle. Akeem Dent, glorious dreads, Asante Samuel, shit-talking maestro. There's pieces for positivity, Josh. Look at I'm hyping myself up right
sounds,
now. My own fucking
sounds nightmare. Like 15-0 to me, Trey.
Okay. All right, boy, from the clouds. Don't fucking – I didn't sign up for that. No, sir. You will not bookmark this sound bit.
But you know what? We didn't talk about Terry nearly enough. I think.
Hell no!
Trey, you need to run with this. You need to like this nickname for him, the Big Bailout, because it seems like whatever it's 3rd and 12, or you know, whatever they're just like, you know what? I don't know how we're gonna get this. It's just like throw it up to Terry. Now we can't throw it up to Terry on any other down outside of the bailout play, but you know they do find him in like these 3rd and long situations. So you know, I think. Him and Warren Thompson on the outside, if we can get those two on the field at the same time with the Trayshawn, okay, you're getting
That'll be interesting. That's right. You're getting hyped up too. Yeah, you better chill out. You're objective. You get paid for this stuff.
I got to get my sweat rag. I'm going, but
Yeah, you are very sweaty. It's kind of gross. Anyway, multiple things. Big Bailout. I like the name. I'm going to suggest a better one. Shout out to Rob Van Dam, ECW days, the whole fucking show, Tomorian Terry. That's him. That's his nickname. We didn't talk about the slot positions are locked down with Keyshawn and DJ. I don't know who wide receiver two is. I mean, we didn't talk about Keith Gavin either.
Like, That's true. Actually, Tashawn, I want to bring you back in here. There's a lot of potential at the wide receiver position. And a lot of people think that Trayshawn Harrison was going to be that guy. Do you think Trayshawn's in a position right now to step up? Or do you think it's going to be DJ Matthews? Somebody's got to step up underneath where Nooney Murray was.
I think that would have to be DJ Matthews, I think, coming into this year. I believe Willie Taggart said he was the guy who he feels was the most improved player from last year. Obviously, he's going to be starting this slot. He had a pretty nice game in the spring game. So I think he'll probably be the second best receiver. As far as having another guy on the outside, next to Tomorian Terry, I think that's kind of still up for grabs. They have a pretty big logjam of wide receiver, a bunch of young guys. I think maybe three of their wide receivers are upperclassmen, maybe less. So they just have a bunch of young guys kind of jockeying position there on the outside. Like I said, I think the slot's pretty much locked down with DJ Matthews and Keyshawn Hilton. But on the outside, it's kind of where guys have more of a room to kind of step up. I think Trayshawn, when we got to speak to him, he kind of said he's been working a little bit both at the slot and the outside. I think he'll have more opportunities on the outside to kind of make some noise and kind of make a name for himself. But I think the slot is a little bit locked down. DJ Matthews probably be the next best guy.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think Trayshawn, I think he gets a couple more touches. I find it hard to keep him off the field. It just, we get that feeling when he has the ball in his hands. Not a lot of guys had that. Peter Wark was one of them. But, yeah, we will do another one of these Tribe Talks before the end of fall camp. We'll get you guys back on here before then. But, you know, thanks for coming on. So for the Big Three Roll-Up, we appreciate you guys. Chris Nee of Knowles 24/7, thank you. Tashawn Reed of The Athletic, thank you. Wayne McGahee and Kurt Weiler of the Tallahassee Democrat, thank you guys. And, of course, Trey Rowland, always a pleasure to have you on, bud.
Absolutely, John. A pleasure speaking to everyone on here. The Rollcast, streaming on iTunes, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Go ahead and give it a try. It's really not that bad, I promise.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right, later, gents.
See ya.
See ya.
Big Greasy.
Well, it's him or the guy who puts his leg behind his head.